The Torah in Parshas Pikudei tells us how Moshe Rabbeinu made an accounting of every penny that was utilized in the Mishkan, all the gold and the silver, to show that it was all utilized for its proper purposes. Moshe Rabbeinu himself to show the fact that he didn't take anything for his own personal use, as we found that where by the story of Korach, Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Lo chamor echod," I didn't even take my traveling expenses from Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't take anything from the Jewish people. He spent 40 years totally devoted to the Jewish people, not enriching himself, not placing any of his children in positions of power. Moshe Rabbeinu was a truly dedicated leader of Klal Yisrael that totally sacrificed his life, his neshama, and his entire being for 40 years for Klal Yisrael without any recompense. The pasuk in Kohelet says, Ohev kesef lo yispa kesef. He who loves money will never be satisfied with money. A person, Chazal tell us, does not die, ein odo meza l'chatzi taivosa biyodo, only half of what you want did you ever attain. Mishesh lo mona rotza masayim, he who has 100 wants 200, if you have 1,000 you want 2,000. A person is never satisfied, he usually wants double what he has. For that reason a person dies feeling he's only gotten half of what he wanted. Even the letters of the word momon are composed of the letters mem, mem, vav, nun. Mem is spelled mem, mem, vav is spelled vav, vav, nun is spelled nun, nun. These are from the only letters practically in the entire Hebrew alphabet that the letter itself is spelled by doubling the letter itself. In order to signify that momon, when a person has money, he only has half of what he actually really wants, what he yearns for. He wants double the amount that he has. So the letters Mem, Vav, Nun are spelled Mem, which is Mem, Mem, Vav, 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 Nun, Nun, Nun. That means it doubled itself, because that's what a person always wants. The Medrash, however, says a strange thing. Oev Kesef Lo Yisba Kesef, who is that? That's Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was called an Oev Kesef Lo Yisba Kesef. Although we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was the furthest person removed from a desire and a love for money, says the Medrash, because Moshe Rabbeinu loved mitzvahs, and Ohev mitzvah lo yizba mitzvah. How do we see that? Moshe Rabbeinu, even before his death, although he wasn't able to fulfill the mitzvahs of Orei Miklot, because for that you had to have conquered the land of Israel, which Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't enter the land of Israel, he nevertheless wanted to do as much as possible to the last possible moment. So he set up three cities on the Eiver HaYarden in order to fulfill as much of that mitzvah as possible, because he just couldn't get enough of mitzvahs. Oev mitzvah lo yisba mitzvah. What do Chazal mean when they make this kind of connection from Oev kesef lo yisba kesef to Oev mitzvah lo yisba mitzvah? Chazal are telling us a very profound thing. They're telling us that the desire for money is unlike the desire for any of the worldly pleasures, for any of the taivas gufnios, for any of the physical desires and lusts that people are used to. Last week, we discussed the Yetzer Hara, and I guess one could refer to this as Yetzer Hara Part 2. The reason why I refer to it as Yetzer Hara Part 2, as opposed to a continuation of the Yetzer Hara, is because this is actually a different kind of a Yetzer Hara that we'll talk about for a while at least. Then maybe we'll go back to the Yetzer Hara and tied in with Pesach and with some other things as well, possibly. So why did I call Yetzer Hara Part 2? The philosophers divide people's desires and loves and drives into three kinds of ava, as they call it. There's avas ha'orev, love of the sweet, love of pleasure, desire for pleasure. Avas ha-moyel. Moyel is a higher stage. The word moyel means it helps. It's a means. In other words, it's not directly pleasurable or sweet or pleasant, but it's a means to an end, to achieve something else. But in and of itself is not intrinsically pleasurable. It's merely the key to unlocking a person's other desires that he wants, and therefore he desires the means to be able to achieve the ends. Then, of course, the highest level of love is avas atayv, love of something because it's inherently good. People get pleasure out of goodness. The first two, of course, is not that.
Wait, what's the second one?
Avas ha-moyel, that's what I'm going to focus on. That's why I said Yetzer Hara part 2. Avas ha-orev, love of pleasure, is something which everyone, every human being has, and so does every animal. We share that in common with the animals. Animals do things because it's pleasurable. They follow their instincts, and they have instincts and drives for pleasure. In fact, for that reason, animals have no shame, because there's no such thing as good or bad. The reason for that is because animals never overindulge in anything. They do whatever they have to as a need. That's the way they're made, and there's no reason why they shouldn't do it. You know, puppy dogs are cute, sharks are mean, but they're both functioning under instinct. And they both operate the way they're made. So all animals, in their pursuit of pleasure and desire and their needs, avas ha-orev, people refer to as sweet. Human beings are exactly alike in terms of that. We have the same instincts. Of course, human beings tend to overindulge. They tend to not control it. And as a result, we are rather embarrassed by some of our urges. We wear clothing for that reason. Right? Human beings are a little bit embarrassed to be an animal. You know, Rav Meir Bloch once said that the reason why someone comes to your house and is visiting you and talking to you and you're eating, so you want him to eat with you. So you want you to eat. Because you feel somewhat embarrassed to do an animalistic act and to be observed. He's watching, he's a human being, and you're just stuffing your face. Like you feel uncomfortable doing that. So you'd say, join me. Join me and together we'll eat together. People are somewhat embarrassed by it. It's an animal urge, animal instincts. Again, most things could be neutral and used for good or for bad. The second level of ava, or of love, or desire, or yetzirah, if you will, is something which is unique to humans. Animals don't have that. Makes it more of a human pursuit, which is therefore a higher level. So it's a higher stage in development. Love of means, that's money. Money itself is not intrinsically pleasurable. There's nothing about money that gives you pleasure. There's no reason to desire it. For that reason, you have to be a human being and have to be somewhat more refined and somewhat more on a higher level to have this kind of pleasure, this kind of urge. Take a baby, and as he develops and matures, it takes a number of years till he could focus on a bank account. I mean, when he's young, a lollipop or a dollar bill? Lollipop. Even after he realizes that with a dollar bill he could buy 100 lollipops, it still takes a little bit of time till he's able to focus on it. So it's a uniquely human ability to have this yetzer hara for money, for the means to achieve means. However, there is a kind of a dichotomy with this. And that is that although the desire for the sweet, for the orev, for pleasure, is not limitless. You know, you can't indulge in pleasure, any of the pleasures, endlessly. There's a limit to it. There's only so much that you could indulge in any one of the pleasures. And as a result, you reach a point of saturation where you're satiated, and then you go to what we call achila gasa. Right? The halacha is on Pesach, we learned it in Pesachim, that you're not yoitza if you eat matzah achila gasa. There's such a thing as achila al hasova. You're supposed to partake of the korban Pesach, of the matzah, of the afikomen, al hasova. That should be the last thing that you eat that fills you up. But now you're full. You can't go beyond that. In fact, what's beyond that? Ein maftir nachar pesach afikomen. I mean, there's a point you reach of saturation where beyond that, because you get no pleasure, it's not even halachically considered eating.
beginning of today's daf deals with the issue of forbidden eatings. What's called eating? And one of the things that we learn about eating is that if you eat too small of an amount, chatzi shir, that's not called eating. And therefore, there's machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, if it's even a Torah prohibition to eat less than the kizayis of, let's say, something treif. According to Rabbi Yochanan, it's still treif that you're eating. You don't get lashes for it, but you're eating prohibited substance. According to Reish Lakish, you're not eating. I mean, eating too small of a quantity is not an act of eating. So it's not a forbidden act. That's today's daf for those of you that are up to it. So, and that's the understanding of Reish Lakish, that the act of eating requires a certain quantity. Below that quantity, below the threshold, you're imbibing whatever, but it's not called achila, it's not called eating. Likewise, there's a limit that could be reached. When a person eats beyond bloating, where you don't feel, it's like eckelding, it's disgusting already. You can't look at another piece of cake. You know, you look at it, you're like the Roman orgies where they would try to just constantly eat. And when they reached that point of saturation, they just vomit it out and start again. But even animals don't do that, right? Even an animal wouldn't think in terms of, let me try to expand my pleasure. You know, Rav Shalom Shvadron says on the pasuk of Tzadik Oichel Saiva Nafshay. He said, I forgot already the name of who, one of the Bali Musar. Maybe it's Rabbi Yolapian or something. Tzadik Oichel Saiva Nafshay, famous pasuk. A tzadik eats to satiate his soul. Or as they say nowadays, he eats to live rather than living to eat. Some people live to eat, other people eat to live. A tzaddik eats to live. Tzaddik oichel is soiva nafsho, to satiation. Ubeten rishoyim techsar. The stomach of the wicked is missing, or is to be lacking, which is usually understood, that a tzaddik will eat to satiation. The rosh, on the other hand, will be lacking. So he explains it in Yiddish. He says, by rishoyim, Morgenfeldsay. That's the way he said it. Beten Rishoyim Techsar. The Russian feels, I wish I had more stomach. I wish my stomach was bigger. I wish I had a larger stomach and a greater capacity to like shovel it in. Beten Rishoyim Techsar. The Russian goes, I wish I had bigger stomach. My stomach is lacking, is missing, is deficient. I wish I had a larger stomach. But they wish they could take it in more. More pleasure, you know. So much time, so little time, so much to do. Every pleasure is like that, and unfortunately, people nowadays have become so corrupted beyond animals. In other words, an animal would never think to eat beyond normal indulgence. A human being feels, if he's a Russian, I wish I had more stomach. So they come up with all kinds of ways to try to increase their capacity for desire, to increase their desire. And there's a whole industry built around figuring out ways of increasing your desire. Beten Rishon Techsar. And that, of course, is the nature of how human beings could corrupt even the most animalistic of urges and desires to a point beyond what even animals would do. Even animals wouldn't normally do this. However, I mean, and the same thing if you take a look at any of the pleasures, I mean, drugs, all of these things, you're reaching a point of collapse of all of your humanity and essence because you're trying to utilize your human mind to expand the frontiers of pleasure. But generally, desire is not insatiable. Desire is satiable. And every single one of the pleasures and the desires, when you reach that saturation point, you've had enough. You're saturated, you're satiated, you're overindulged, you don't want to see it again. You don't want to look at it, you want to have nothing to do with it. It's eckelding. And therefore, the act of eating beyond this point is called achila gasa. It's not even called eating. If you eat matzah in such a state, you did not fulfill your mitzvah of eating matzah. If you would eat on Yom Kippur in such a state, that's not called eating. Of course, how is it possible to eat such a point at Yom Kippur? Very simple. You've eaten erev Yom Kippur to the point of where you're stuffed to the gills, and then you eat beyond the time limit into Yom Kippur. But if you've reached the point of achila gasa, you're not in violation of Yom Kippur. It's not even called an act of eating. Achila gasa. And therefore, in Pesach, you don't fulfill your mitzvah of matzah if you're eating the matzah, achila gasa. You don't fulfill your mitzvah of eating korban Pesach. Eating korban Pesach, you don't fulfill your mitzvah if you're eating achila gasa. The point is that all pleasure is limited. All animal pleasure is limited. Only human pleasure, something which is uniquely human, can be seen as unlimited, as limitless, as endless. Only the desire for money and the like, that are human pleasures, can a person be insatiable. Only there could you be insatiable. This is a human pleasure. It's a human desire, if you will call it that. Avas hamoyel, the means, and you're limitless in your desire for it. Says the Pasuk in Koheles, on page 534, first column, the Pasuk says, Ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. He who loves gold and silver, money and the like, lo yisba kesef. It's in the first column, page 534. That's exactly this point that we're saying. Love of anything else can be saturated and satiated and indulged and overindulged. Not money. Money has an unquenchable thirst. Ohev kesef, lo yisba kesef, will never be satiated and never reach the point of saturation when it comes to money. Avas hamoyel, as we said, is a uniquely human characteristic. It's a uniquely human desire. However, there's a kind of a paradox to this now. And it's completely illogical. Because if we've just described as avas hamoyel as really just a desire of means, means to what? What's it a means to? It's a means to the ends. What are the ends? What are you going to purchase with the money? Pleasure. But pleasure is limited. How could God have created a human being with such a limitless capacity to desire the means to achieve that which is limited and he's saturated? How could you have an insatiable desire for the means to the ends which are satiable? How could that be? It's illogical to have a limitless ambition and insatiable desire for the means when the ends are the avas ha'orev, are not endless and not limitless, and you could be satiated and saturated and overindulged. This is illogical. So what's pshat? How could there be a greater desire for the means than for the pleasure itself? The truth is, this is illogical. And it's a shigaon. It's a mishigas. The Rambam refers to it that way. Let's take a look in the upper left at a passage from the Rambam that he writes in his Perish Mishnayos, in his introduction to the Perish Mishnayos, in last week's sheet. The Rambam, in his introduction to Perish Mishnayos, in his introduction, his Hakdama to Perish Mishnah, asks the following question. We have a huge world, millions and billions of people, that are spending most of their time doing complete foolishness and vanity. And there are very, very few individuals that utilize their time and their life and the precious opportunities of life for proper things. How can we have everybody else? I mean, with all these billions of people, who needs them? What would you like? What is the purpose of all of these people if God made the world that people should advance and achieve these spiritual pursuits? What is the purpose of all those people that seemingly don't utilize their opportunities of life and waste it? What about all those people that translate time as money? You never hear the expression, time is money. What a waste. Time is life. I mean, what else is life? Life is only time. So people call time as money. What about all those people? Why are they here? Says the Rambam, upper left, She'ilu yukol b'nei Adam mivakshim chokhma ufilosofim. If all the people of the world would be involved in intellectual pursuits, in philosophy, and other intellectual pursuits, the world would be destroyed. Nishchas tikun ha'olam, the world, the constant advancement and growth of society would be completely destroyed. How often have you heard the question, what are we going to do with all these yeshiva bachim? If everybody's going to learn in Kail, who's going to support them, right? Have you ever heard that question? Have you ever heard about all those people that question, why are there so many people in real estate? I mean, everybody's going to be in real estate, what's going to be? I mean, everybody's going to, right? How can you ever hear the question, there's so many architects. Everybody's going to be an architect, who's, you know? You never hear that question. You ever hear the question, how come there's so many lawyers? Yeah, that one I think I've heard. Yeah. That's the only one that we've heard.
That's true.
That's the only one. Too many captains of industry, too many computer programmers. If everybody's going to program computers, what's going to be? I never hear that question asked.
They don't have enough.
Yeah. I only hear it about people learning Torah. Right? If everybody's going to learn Torah, what's going to be? What's going to be? My answer, of course, is let's worry about the problem when we get there. Right? Let's wait. Let's wait till that problem comes. How have I? We should have such a problem. Right? That's the only time we have that question. So the Rambam, in theory at least, asks the question, Taka, what would be if everybody would be doing that? The answer is, you're right. If everybody would be doing that, the world would be, I mean, who's gonna fix my car when the car doesn't go? So you have a society where of complete philosophers or intellectuals, you can't get your car repaired anywhere. And you can't get your phone fixed. I mean, what are you going to do? Says the Rambam, if everybody would be doing that, the world would. And life, regular people that are, in a sense, animal life, would be gone from the world, be unwanted in a short period of time. Man is extremely lacking and deficient in all of his basic needs. All of his base needs. Your base needs are also your basic needs. The yitztarach l'dvarim rabim. You have a multitude of needs. Unlike a dog and a cat that have relatively few needs. They don't even need to sanitize, whatever it is. I mean, they could drink milk. You need pasteurized milk. Just the milk that you need has to be pasteurized. I mean, V'hoya nitzrach lilmoid hacharisha v'haktzira. Every human being then would be required to learn how to plow, plant, reap, winnow, grind, bake, lasak and kalim and melachas ha'ela, and of course make the utensils for all the above. Kedei lahashlamem tikkun v'zayin, just to be able to get food, right? The whole Shabbos, the first 11 melachas is called sidur depas, the arrangement of bread, 11 melachas regarding that, and then the next series is clothing. Most of us have difficulty when we learn Masechet Shabbos with the weaving part. Weaving, this, the looms, is too complicated. And that's just the primitive loom of 2,000 years ago. It's too complicated for us. But we all expect to be able to wear nice clothes, right? I mean, to be able to look sharp. Right? Even to wear primitive clothes would be a complex task. And if you'd have to do it yourself, what would you do nowadays? Well, oh, here's the idea. I want instant gratification, everything. I want to be able to buy my clothes. I want to check for sharpness immediately. And I want to be able to have it tomorrow, ready. I want it yesterday. That's what people are. Then they want a building, they want a house. They don't want just a box. They don't want a shack. They want a nice structure. You got to employ architects for that. Can you imagine if you know architecture and building and construction? There's so much you have to know. Could you imagine if you'd have to know all the things that you need for yourself to live? Impossible. Lasos kelu v'chol eilun. Then you need the utensils that even the architects need. I mean, the slide rule and this, I don't know what they use nowadays. Just to make a ruler, to make a hammer and a nail. I mean, who's going to manufacture the hammers and the nails for building? The ein b'chayim misushalach. There's not enough time in the life of a misushalach who lived 960 years. Masha yispeik, yishayaspeik lumoid elu amalochas. If you live 1,000 years, you wouldn't have the time to learn all the things that you need to know to do it. Could you imagine if every computer programmer would also have to know how to design their own computer? Man, it's impossible. Even the needs, the essentials. For you to know the essentials for your basic needs, your bases in life, life alone wouldn't be big enough for you to take care of it yourself. And if you'd have to do all of that, when would you have the leisure time to devote to any intellectual pursuit? When would you have the time, the opportunity to advance intellectually, to advance philosophically, to advance spiritually? Al-Kain, therefore, we need all of these other millions and billions of people. Nimtu sharpnei odom l'sakein elu hamaisim. We need all of these millions and billions of people to involve themselves in all of these things. B'medina, kidei sheyimtza achocham tzorchay mezumin b'sis yashiv oretz. In order that the people that do want to spend their time in intellectual pursuits are able to readily obtain the basic necessities of life. V'tiya achocham mitzuya, and therefore there's at least some people that could devote themselves to Torah, to Chokhmah, to intellectual advancement, to spirituality, to philosophy, to the like. And this way, Chokhmah is to be found. Umatoiv Omer HaOmer. And how good is the statement, the saying, of the one that said the following statement. Lulei HaMishtagoyim. If not for the Mishugan of the people, Nishar HaOlam Chor, the world would be desolate. We said earlier, man has an insatiable desire for the means. It's crazy, it doesn't make sense. Thank God for this craziness. Thank God for the crazy people that spend their time doing crazy things. Thank God for the Mishugoyim. It's a Mishugah, says the Rambam, literally. Lulei HaMishtagoyim, but if not for the Mishtagoyim, if not for the Mishuganas, Nishar Olam Chorav, the world would be destroyed. And the Rambam now explains it. She'ein ba'olam shigoyin doimel shigoyin ha'odam. There is no greater shigon than the shigon of man. There's no greater mishigas than the mishigas of people. People are the biggest mishigoyim in the world. I gotta tell you, I'm a Michiganer. I come from Michigan. And it has on my license, I'm a Michiganer. There is no greater mishigas than the mishigas of people. Why? What is man? He is a meek and humble spirit, physically deficient. His composition is rather puny and weak. And what does he do with his time, with his life? In the olden days, the ancients divided the world into different spheres, and you had inhabited parts of the earth, less inhabited parts, and the people went from the seven stages of the way the world is divided, from the ends, literally what we refer to nowadays as the ends of the earth, They go to the craziest places for parnasa, for whatever it is, for exploration. They go to the outer reaches of Australia, the outback of Australia, the frigid regions of Antarctica and Siberia. And who do you see there? You climb the highest mountains in Tibet, and some Jewish guy is sitting over there already. Right? Wherever you go.
He's renting it out.
Right, he's renting it out to the thing. Right. So, the mishigas of people, they'll travel the greatest vast different distances in the world. They go over the oceans. Bizman ha-chayrif, in the winter time. V'hoylech ba'aretz, taluvais bizman ha-chayrif v'akayitz, u'mistakein b'nafshoi, they endanger their very lives. For what? What exactly are they endangering their lives for? And even, okay, then the old days, they literally had to do it. Nowadays, but you're still killing yourself. I mean, the people that work hard are still killing themselves and making themselves sick. Over what? What are you killing and destroying your life for? Time is money. Time is life. Even the word damim, money, is the same as blood. Damim is blood. What exactly are you shedding your blood for? For money, in order to what? To live. Right? I'm making a living. I'm killing myself to make a living. Right? That's the expression almost. I mean, think about it. That's what people say. I'm working hard, I'm killing myself. Well, I gotta make a living. Right? What are you doing? You're killing yourself. I'm killing myself to make a living. Well, look at that, the contradiction. Is there a greater mishigas than that? Do animals think like that? I'm going to kill myself to live. I mean, an animal isn't that stupid. Only humans are stupid enough to think that they got to kill themselves to live. He'll live in the fields. He'll live amongst the animals. Why? In order that they should yarviach dinerim, in order they should make a little profit of a few dinners. And what does he finally do when he amasses all this wealth? He spends decades amassing this wealth, finally gets his dinners together, and he's already old and sick, and he's already ready for his retirement years. When he finally gathers a little bit of money together, that he sold his very soul for. He sold his life, he sold his health, he sold his entire being for this money. He exchanged damim for damim. He exchanged blood for money. He exchanged time, life, for what? For money. So now he finally has the money. What's he going to do with this? What's he going to do with the money? He has to spend it on something. What does he do with it? He'll then start spending them on employees and people that he commissions to build himself a house. So he'll go over to the architect and he'll say, here's some money, design for me a beautiful house. I mean, this is the money, that hard-earned money that he spent years and years amassing. And now he's spending it on Richard Perot. I mean, that's what he worked on. All those years amassing, and he endangered his life just to give Richard some money. Why? Because he wants to design a house. Then he goes to the next guy, he goes a little bit to some real estate mogul over here, and he asks for some land. And then he has him build this beautiful mansion of the best stone. I mean, like the stuff that's going to last. Besid vavonin, kidei lohokim olovkir, in order to establish a roof. Sheyamot shonim rabot, that will last many, many years. V'yodea, you know, sheloi nisher mishnois chayov, that there's not enough years left in your life, mashiyuchol bem livlois binyin osim inagoyim, that could cause a straw house to wither and decay. There's not enough years left in your life to outlast a shack. A shack will last longer than what's left to your life. But no, you don't want a shack. You want this huge, gorgeous mansion that's going to last forever. I mean, the guy that designed the Wasserman House, in those days known as the Gibson House, in those days known as the, I don't know who was before Gibson, this guy Baum, whoever it was, designed the house. The guy lived in, what, 5 years, 4 years? I mean, he knew when he was designing the house that the house was going to outlast him. And he'll spend 5-10 years building it, knowing that he may only live there a few years. I remember, I mean, you know, it's hard to even imagine this. When you go to France, you just came back from Paris, but you're in the wrong region. If you go to the Loire Valley, and you come upon palace after palace and castle after castle, huge, magnificent structures that could even pale Eddie's home. Like, you know, that's something to aspire to. What's it called over there? Yeah, do something about it.
The chateau, something about
it. Not all.
Chenonceau, I think. Is that the one I'm thinking of? No, Schönbrunn. Yeah, but both of these, Schönbrunn and Chenonceau. These are two of the most magnificent palaces built. Huge, of course, gorgeous, stunning. I mean, people go there, millions of people go there. One of them was built, I forgot for which one of the Louis. Somewhere XII to XVI, I mean, you know. So, anyhow, one of these Louis, he built it. What did he build it for? For his hunting lodge. I think he wound up spending 2 weeks in there. You can imagine what the project required in terms of man hours to build. And you know, at least the Egyptian pyramids were built for the Egyptian pharaohs, thinking that they're going to spend the rest of eternity over there. Okay, that's a little bit understandable. But, I mean, here's a guy that has the vanity to build something so that when he goes hunting to this region of France, he should have a nice palace to stay in. Then he winds up giving it to one of his queens, who, you know, and yeah, the marriages don't last, and everybody stabs each other in the back, they assassinate each other, I mean, whatever happens to it. They wind up spending 2-3 weeks there. I mean, is there a bigger mishigas than the mishigas of man? Would an animal be that stupid to do such a thing? Is there an animal that's stupid enough to do such a thing? So why? Why would a person be so ridiculously crazy to spend weeks and months and years to amass something where he finally constructs it, it's going to outlast him beyond what he needs? This is what he spent his life on. To make a living, and this is called a living.
But there is a concept of doing it for subsequent generations, for families.
I don't think Louis XIV thought about that so much. I don't think so. Most people are usually selfish enough that they want it for themselves. However, what you're saying is true, and that's what the Rambam is actually saying. What the Rambam is saying is that thank God for the Mishugoyim, because they're the ones that build Chenonceau and Schönbrunn so that we could enjoy it 500 years later. If not for his Mishugas, we wouldn't gain any benefit. The Rambam gives the example, I guess he was referring to probably the palace in Spain known as the Alhambra. Alhambra, yeah. That's in what region over there? The
Costa del Sol.
What?
Costa del Sol.
No. What's the region in Spain called? That section. It's called
Aragon.
Maybe it's Aragon or Castile. One of these places. Yeah. So with the king of whatever it was, Aragon, Castile, when they had it built, so the Rambam talks.
It's in Granada.
Right. So it's a magnificent structure. Says the Rambam, 500 years later, someone's going to get some benefit for it, some tzaddik, some whatever it is. So it's worthwhile for society that these things should be built. And the one that designed the Gibson house, who, although he lived in it for 4 years before he got rid of it, but at least thank God that he did it. So now Yeshiva Bochum could use it. Whatever they can use it for exactly, I don't know, but however they use it, it's going to be used. I mean, Chiang Kai-shek lived in this house, but now we're able to learn Torah in it. So thank God for the Meshuggah that designed it 100 years ago. Yeah? I'm talking about the Yetzirah part too. There's a human element to the Yetzirah that drives people, which was always understood to be at a higher level than an animal, because an animal doesn't comprehend this. What you're saying now is that we're living in such a narcissistic society that the people have tried to expand the frontiers of their animal natures, where they're like the Romans of old, that one beten rishoyim techser. We've reached the point of primitive animalism, where we're using everything. That's what you're saying, that all of these Hollywood stars have tried to expand the frontiers of pleasure. They're no longer interested in designing works of grandeur. they're going to spend their millions and billions for drugs in order to give themselves more animalistic pleasure. That's really the essence of drugs. What drugs are is that they're trying to find a part of the brain that'll give them more sensual pleasure and more animalistic pleasure beyond what an animal is capable of. So they'll spend their millions to try to give themselves endless pleasure. The problem with pleasure, though, is that pleasure does have its limitations. But here we're talking about an endless drive. And we're talking about the illogic of this endless drive. That ultimately the means to the ends, what are the ends? The ends are limited. How come God gives us this kind of a drive? Says the Rambam, sort of like what Andy was saying, that there is value to the world. It doesn't explain why the person himself has the drive, but it does explain the value to society. That if not for all of these mishugayim, if not for the person that's going to spend years and years to design the West Side Highway, I'd have a hard time getting downtown 50 years later. Boy, I wish it would have been a little bit of a bigger mishugan there and done a little bit more time and designed a little bit better. Yeah, to finish them.
I'll get new people to do that.
Right.
You ran out of steam.
I mean, let's face it. The bridges that we live on, the highways, the whole infrastructure of society is all based on the mishugayim of old.
Yeah, the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah. That's right. People kill themselves for things that they're not going to have any benefit for, but future generations have. So now some people were taco altruistic, like Andy was suggesting. They're altruistic. Others, though, were doing it for themselves, but nevertheless, this drive that people have has some value. That's what he says, that people will spend money on creating a building and an edifice when even the simplest shack will outlast them. Hayesh shtus v'shigoyin kizeh, says the Rambam, three lines at the bottom. Is there a bigger shtus, is there a bigger shigoyin than this? Could there be? He says, v'chein kol tanu gei oylam heim hoylus v'sichlus gomor. But ultimately, in the greater cosmic scheme, this is what causes the world to be built. Thomas Edison makes light bulbs, and Henry Ford designed cars, and therefore we have a world, and we have civilization, we have society. Therefore, these people are called Amaratzim, or Amei Ha'aretz, to be more grammatically correct. Why are they called Amei Ha'aretz? So we use the word an Amaretz as a kind of a pejorative, as a way of saying, he's not Morris. Says the Rambam, it's not really a pejorative. Al-Kain Koru Chachomim Amei Ho'aretz Mish'ein Lo Chochma. Someone that lacks intellectual and spiritual capabilities is referred to as an Amoretz because he spends his life working the land, cultivating the land, building the land. And that has usefulness as well. So they're called Amei Ha'aretz, Kaloimar, their purpose in life is to settle the land, to civilize the land, to cultivate the land. For that reason, they're referred to as the land, people of the land, because their function is the expansion of society and civilization. They are the builders of civilization. Amei Ha'aretz. That's their function. Again, I'm using this Rambam merely to illustrate this drive that people have and the benefits that we reap from it. But the drive itself is still seemingly illogical. Because if you want to discuss it from, let's say, let's call it an evolutionary type of a standpoint, where every urge is there for a purpose, this limitless urge of means to achieve ends which themselves are limited is completely illogical. Something that only humans have, animals don't have it. I should say, though, there's an exception to this. There is one animal that does have this same urge and this same drive, which is illogical and doesn't make sense. So let's examine this animal and see if we can learn any lessons from people. Actually, Shlomo Melech already recommended this. Shlomo Melech recommended this exact lesson to be derived from this animal. If you recall, the Gemara in Erevin, I believe, Nunbeis, says that if the Torah wouldn't be given, we could derive from nature some of the lessons of the Torah by viewing certain animals. One of the animals that we could use is the animal that corresponds to this particular drive of industriousness. Says the Pasuk in Mishlei, Shlomo HaMelech advises us, Leich el nemolo otzel. Go, you lazy person, and view the ant. See the ant. Re'ed rochel. Look at the ways of the ant, at its industriousness. V'chakein, and become wise from the ant. Asher ein loy kotzin v'shoiter u'moishel. Where the ant doesn't have anybody forcing it, doesn't have an officer, a policeman, some sort of an officer and a judge over it, and yet it works winter and summer to prepare for its way, and it gathers the grains. Let's take a look at what the Medrash says on this. On the lower right, Isa ben Medrash Pasha Shoiftim. And Pasha Shoiftim brings down the Medrash on the Pasuk, says Shamar Kosov, Mishle Vav, Leich El Nemol Otzel, Re'ed Rochehov V'chakeim. Go view the ant. Become wise from it. Asher Ein Lo Kotzin Shoiter U'moishel Tochin B'kayitz L'chama Ogro B'kotzer Ma'chola. It prepares more and more food for the winter. Ma'arosh Shloima L'lami L'otzel Men Anamola. What is it that Shlomo HaMelech saw in the ant, where he holds him up as the model to the lazy person? Rabbanan Amri, say the sages, Hanamola Hazu Shloi Shabbatim Yeshla. The Nemola designs his ant hole in three levels. The Einoi Koineses Be'elyoi, Mipnei Adlav. He doesn't store the grains in the upper chamber because he's afraid the rain could ruin it. V'loi betachtoi mitnei atina, nor on the lowest level it could also rot. El of emtsoi, but he designs a storage house, a storage bin for its grain, and stores it in the middle. V'eino chai olo shisha chadoshim. The lifespan of at least this particular ant that it's referring to is 6 months. It's all it lives. V'chol macholo eino olo chito mechza. And the most that it could consume in 6 months is the equivalent of a grain and a half of wheat. That means that the entire lifespan of the ant, you give him a grain and a half and he's set for life. That's his whole retirement nest egg, so to speak. That's all he needs. So what else does an ant need? He doesn't need clothes, he doesn't need cars, he needs nothing other than grain. The more primitive the creature, the less its needs. The more sophisticated the creature, the more its needs. For that reason, says the Rambam, we need all the Mishugayim. Because since, as human beings, we are very sophisticated animals, very sophisticated creatures, we have a great deal of animal needs to be provided for. So we have so many multitudes of needs, we need so much. But the ant doesn't have to worry about homes. He can live in the ground. He doesn't need clothes. He's naked. He doesn't have to worry about cold and hot and any of this stuff. He's an ant. What else does he have already to his life? So he doesn't need anything. All he needs to be set for life is one kernel of grain and a half. Give him already this, the whole kernel. Two kernels, he's set for life. So what's he spending his entire life amassing? He's doing the same mishugas as people. Spending his whole life amassing more and more and more insatiably. But for what? A means to an end. What is the end? A kernel and a half. So why have a drive that drives you much more than the pleasure that you're going to have at the end? But that's the end. V'chol ma'chol ein alachito mechza. V'yalechas u'meachneses b'kayit kol ma'ashem moitzei chitin u'sa'orim v'adoshim. And he'll spend his whole life, those 6 months he wastes on amassing, and he's very strong too, right? Ants are very strong. So they're able to probably carry in one trip that entire grain, two trips, and he's set for life. And he makes thousands and thousands of trips of wheat, barley, beans. V'lomah yoisekein. What is it in the ant that drives him? So here the Medrash attaches this thought to the ant. Of course, the ant doesn't really think, but this is its instinct. She'omer, because the ant is sort of like saying to himself, Shemo yigzor alai HaKadosh Baruch Hu chayim, v'yeli muchen lecho. Who knows? Maybe I'll be the first ant in the history of ants to live forever. Maybe God will grant me eternal life. I need some food. So I got to prepare just in case. I got to prepare for a rainy day. So ants amass all of this wealth. For what? Who knows? Maybe I'll live forever. So we laugh at the ant because, of course, the joke's on us, not on the ant, because we're doing the same thing. We're laughing at the ant, but we're the ants. Omar Shim Bayachoy Maisohoyov Nimtsu Bibor Shalosh Shalosh Meyaskur. They once uncovered a huge ant storage bin, and they found 300 kur of grain stored there that they were able to store. Lefika Chomar Shlomo, so Shlomo says, an advice to the person, learn industriousness from the ant. Re'ei Drochel V'chakeim. Afatem, what's the lesson? Ultimately, the lesson is in the last line. Afatem haskinu lochem mitzvus min ha'olam hazeh la'olam ha'bo. Prepare the way. Earn. Store. What? Mitzvus. Why? Because you will live forever with the mitzvus. From olam hazeh to olam ha'bo. The Gemara in Kedushin, where it says about that there's no reward given for this world. Schar mitzvah b'hayal molecha. Reward is not for this world. Why? Even the pasuk that says, "Kaved esavicha v'simecha," l'man yarichun yamecha al pnei adam, in order that you should live in a long life, doesn't refer to this world, because in this world there's no such thing as long life, because any amount of time that you live in this world is too short. So therefore, l'olam shakula oruch, a world that's really oruch, that's really eternal, is the next world. Their taka, you live forever. Their taka, things are endless. Their things are limitless. Hashem therefore created the drive in man, the human drive, because there is such a thing as an ambition that's limitless and insatiable to amass things that are eternal. There is such a thing. And that's mitzvahs and Torah. And therefore, a person is given a drive, and it's a uniquely human drive, which we could learn from the ant if we laugh at the ant. However, if we remain with an ant-like mentality, then the joke's on us, not on the ant, because we should know better. The purpose of the ant is there so that we should teach us lessons. But we learn from the ant, don't be foolish. Part of the lesson of the ant is not only industriousness, but industriousness for what? We know that the ant only lives for 6 months. And we know that the ant that only lives for 6 months has absolutely no function in life other than the 6 months that it lives, and he doesn't have any needs. So why waste your time spending your whole life amassing more grains when you can't possibly use it? And we're saying to ourselves, the ant is foolish. But if you extrapolate, you realize that you're as foolish as the ant in the words, because you're smarter. And you're also amassing all of this wealth. So you should learn the next lesson from the ant. And that is that the ant is driven because he's acting as if he'll live forever. But we know he's not going to live forever. So we say, learn that same industriousness from the ant to amass things for that which will live forever, which is your soul. Don't waste it like the ant, but utilize it like the human. So we're given the drive and the ambition, limitless, limitless drive, limitless ambition, limitless taiva, without any end, infinite. It's an infinite drive, but it's for infinity. You can't have an infinite drive and an infinite desire for means when the means are for finite ends. If the ends are finite, it's illogical to have infinite drive. Infinite drive for finite ends make no sense. But infinite drive for means, for infinite ends, that is logical. Learn the lesson from the Nemola, who says to himself, maybe I'll live forever. Maybe I'll live forever. And think like the human. Maybe I will live forever. But then already, it's going to be futile to amass grain. The Egyptians had the right idea with the pyramids. They spent, in fact, they're like the ants, worker ants. They spent lives, for what? To build a pyramid for the eternal journey of the soul of the Pharaoh. The problem, of course, is what do they stuff the pyramids with? Gold and silver and grains and all the ant-like stuff. So they were literally the ants. The pharaohs of Egypt built these huge structures, literally like ant holes. So there's a direct correlation between what the ant does and what the Egyptian pharaohs did. And the identical thing, waste your entire life, just like, you know, the ant, there's also a hierarchy. There's the queen ant, and then there's the worker ants, the drones, the whatever they call them, right? By bees you have it, by ants you have it. There's the workers, the drones, this, the that. That's exactly what the pharaohs did. I'm the queen bee, you're the workers and the drones. And they spent lives, tens of thousands of lives and millions of man hours for what? To build giant ant heaps. But there's a tremendous lesson in that. Because they realized that there was an afterlife. They just couldn't envision what it was. So they built pyramids and they stuffed it with stuff that's not going to help you. But if you build a pyramid of spirituality, if you build a pyramid of spirituality and you stuff it with mitzvahs, then you will take it on an eternal journey like the pharaohs themselves understood. They understood that there's an eternal journey. And there is. So you have limitless ambition and drive. Drive for means, infinite means for infinite ends. But don't use it for finite ends. That's the lesson of the ant and the qigong of human beings. Now, let's go back to Rashi. Rashi actually says, on the Pasuk in 534, Ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. He who loves money will never be satiated by money. Says Rashi, if you look in Rashi, Ohev mitzvois lo yisba mehen. He who loves mitzvahs will never be satiated with mitzvahs. What Rashi then is pointing out, and it's based, of course, on the Medrash as well. Actually, it's a Gemara in Makas Daf Yud Amud Aleph. This is really a Gemara in Makas Daf Yud. What it means is the following. Rashi's pointing out the illogic of this particular kind of desire and explaining why we have it. There is a desire that's like called the Yetzer Hara Part 2. The Yetzer Hara Part 1 is an animalistic Yetzer Hara. And it's finite. And it's limited. And of course, as you pointed out correctly, it's been corrupted nowadays. The people have become so animalistic that they want to expand the frontiers and the borders and the boundaries of physical sensual pleasure to the point of overindulgence and oversatiation of bet and rishoyim techser. Of when they feel they lack stomach for it, they want to expand the boundaries of the stomach and they go into drugs. That's an animal pleasure. That's human beings corrupting their humanity to become worse than animals. But even viewed from the purely human perspective of this desire for means, which is a higher, more sophisticated type of a desire, it's a higher level and it's a more sophisticated, spiritualized desire. It's illogical. If all you're going to desire with it is money, if all you're going to desire with it is to amass gold and silver, which is an infinite desire of means for finite ends. Therefore, Rashi says, why were we given this Yetzer Hara Part 2? Yetzer Hara Part 1, we're animals, we have to suppress it. And that, we've already discussed last week, based on the Gemara in Yom Daf Samech Tes Amud Beis, as Rashi over there explains, that when the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah prayed for the Yetzer Hara to be taken away, the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah, and then the Yetzer Hara of Stus. So, what did the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah say? They said, Chlum Yahiftelon Elo Likvulei Be'Agra Loi Ihu Be'inon Loi Agre Be'inon. What did the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah say? What they said was, God, why did you give us this Yetzer Hara? Is it not that we should be able to receive reward, and as Rashi explains, to receive reward upon its suppression, upon its conquest? So Rashi in Yom Daf Samech Tes Amud Beis explains, the purpose of the Yetzer Hara is to suppress it. The purpose of the Yetzer Hara is to suppress it and to control, to conquer it. Did you not therefore give us a Yetzer Hara for the purpose of self-control, and thereby will have much reward for its suppression? Lo ihu binon, lo agre binon. We're Michael the Yetzer Hara, we're Michael the challenge, we're Michael's reward, we'll give it up. Take away the Yetzer Hara, we're willing to give up the reward. And as we pointed out last week, everything exacts a price. The price of giving up the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah was that there's no prophecy, There's no miracle. There's no supernatural whatever. So it comes out that there's a price exacted for everything. The purpose of a certain Yetzer Hara was a certain thing, and there's a certain reward. And by saying lo bi'inon, lo iu bi'inon, you're also saying lo agre bi'inon. And it goes hand in hand. When a person says lo ihu bi'inon, you're also saying lo agre bi'inon. It goes together. You can't just say I don't want it. You have to say I don't want it. I don't want its benefits either. Lo agre bi'inon. In the case of Avodah Zarah, the benefits of Avodah Zarah were prophecy, miracles, scripture, and the like. Lo ihu bi'inon, take away the Yetzer Hara. Lo agre bi'inon, I have to give that up. When I took it to the next step, which was take away the Yetzer Hara for Znus, over there the price was already too steep. Because it means there's not going to be a world. Ultimately, God created the world in the way that we are animalistic. And therefore, we know the purpose of the animal Yetzer Hara. As the Rambam says, that's what builds the world. The world is built through this Yetzer Hara. So we understand why we have that Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara part one. Yetzer Hara part one is to be utilized in two ways. In its suppression and conquest, and therefore you're rewarded for it. And in its rechanneling, and it's used as a fuel to motivate you. Yetzer Hara part two, which is distinctly human, is obviously there for a purpose. And the purpose that is there for the human one is to give us a view and a philosophy of what life is. We look at the Nemola, and under instinct it seems to just be driven. It's a driven creature. And we see human beings and they're also driven. And the question is why we should have a limitless desire and a limitless drive and ambition. Why do we have this kind of a Yetzer Hara, which is the Oev Kesef, Lo Yisba Kesef? And the reason for that is because human beings are eternal. Because they have a neshama, and because the purpose of the neshama is infinite, and because the neshama will live in an infinite world of Olam Haba, therefore, when you're in this world, and this is the only world where you're given opportunity, it's what we refer to as the Olam Ha'asiyah, as the world of action, the world of being able to utilize it to earn, is the world of earning. The earning world. Olam Haba is the retirement world. You know, we talk about the golden years, the retirement years. That's exactly what Olam Haba is. Olam Haba is the world of Menucha. We refer to it as the world of Menucha. It's a world of Menucha, meaning it's a world of retirement. This world is known as the world of Asiya, the world of action, to do. Asiya. It's a world that you're driven to do. It's not the retirement world. It's the working world. And therefore man is given a shigah. God granted us a mishigas. But it's only a mishigas if it's used for mishugana purposes. That's what the Rambam says. Hayesh tus mishigoyin kizeh. Or as he says, she'ein ba'oilom shigoyin doimel shigoyin ha'odom. There is no shigoyin in the world comparable to the shigoyin of man. There is no shigoyin comparable to the shigon of man. Why were we given the shigon? Because the underlying part of the shigon is this drive to amass means. That's what it is. The shigon is this insatiable desire to amass means. Why were we given an insatiable desire? Why were we given this Yetzer Hara part two, the second Yetzer Hara, which is limitless and endless and drives people endlessly, infinitely? Why were we given this Yetzer Hara? The reason why we were given a Yetzer Hara for means is precisely to amass means. It's to amass means. We're given a Yetzer Hara to earn because we're living in the world of earning. This is the world of earning, not the retirement world. This is not the world of menucha. It's the world of work, of asiya. Olam Haba is the world of menucha. Olam Haba is the place where you cash in the chips. That's the retirement place. This is the world of Asiya, this is the world of earning, this is the world of doing, the world of earning. And therefore you're given a limitless desire in this world to earn for the retirement world. It's a mistake, and it's an unfortunate rechanneling of energies when all you're trying to do with it is amass means for ends which themselves are limited. To amass the gold and the silver when the ends are limited, that's the unfortunate rechanneling. But the essence of the drive, is a drive to amass unlimited amounts of means. For what? For ends that are unlimited. For ends that are limited, it would be ridiculous and illogical to have a drive to amass more and more and more and more means. Means to what ends? To ends that are limited. That's the point. To amass and spend your whole life devoted to amassing means when the ends of those self-same means are limited is illogical. But it's very logical. It's eminently logical if God gave us this drive so that we should try to amass means and means and more means and more means. For what? For ends that are limitless and infinite. And the reason is because in this world you can't have Olam Haba. And this world is only the world of earning. So it's only the world of means. That's why it says in Pirkei Avos that Olam Hazeh is comparable to a vestibule, to a hallway. It's a prosdor. And what does it say? Prepare yourself in the prosdor in order to enter the palace. Because since this world is only a world of means, and it's only a world of a vestibule, only a world of a hallway to a greater palace, we can't even view the palace. So it would be futile to be able to have the desire for the palace when we don't even know what it's all about. So God invested in all human beings a limitless drive, even though you're in the hallway. You're just driven like the ant. You're driven like the ant to amass more and more and more and more and more money and more wealth and more power, more ambition, more covet, more honor, more prestige. Endless. Why? Because we're only in a hallway. And if you don't give us the special Yetzer Hara, we'll never do it. We'll never do it. You have to give us a Yetzer Hara of achieving means if you're only in a world of means. So we have insatiable drives. Why? Because we have insatiable ends. But if you rechannel it the wrong way for money, Oev Kesef Lo Yispa Kesef, says Rashi, that's the defining way of describing this kind of Yetzer Hara. But you can't describe it with love of anything else. Love of anything else is physical. It's limited. It's finite. If you want to talk about this infinite Yetzer Hara, it can only be understood in Avas Hamoel, in the second level, second stage Yetzer Hara. Only in the second stage Yetzer Hara could one understand what this drive is all about. Therefore, Rashi defines it on this pasuk of Oev Kesef Lo Yispa Kesef. Then already we could understand already the Gemara. The Gemara in Makis Daf Yud says, Zeh Moshe. This pasuk describes Moshe Rabbeinu. This is Moshe Rabbeinu. Actually, the Medrash defines two people. The other one is David HaMelech. Moshe and David. Why does the Medrash use this pasuk on Moshe and David specifically? Because they exhibited this aspect of insatiable drive for means when there's no ends. What's an example of this? So, the Torah tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu, before he died, Oz Yavdil Moshe Sholosh Orem, Moshe separated three cities in the Eiver HaYarden for the purpose of the Orei Mikla, knowing, of course, that he'll never be able to see the mitzvah itself in operation. Not only the mitzvah in operation, in effect. The mitzvah itself is ineffective until you have the other three cities. It would be the equivalent of a person buying a lulav and an esrog and not have hadasim and aravos. You can't really fulfill the mitzvah. But you know what? If a person wants to shuckle it anyway, it shows that he's driven. He has to do the mitzvah. I'll do as much as I can. David HaMelech was told by God, David, you will not build the Beis HaMikdash. You won't build it. And he told his son Shlomo, I'll never be able to build the Beis HaMikdash. I'll never be able to build the Beis HaMikdash. Yet, David did everything preparatory that he was able to. And to this day, we say every day in davening, Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis LeDavid. So David was also a person knowing by God, you can't do it. You'll never complete it. You'll never finish it. I got to make the beginning. Even though it has no effect, it's not going to be a Beis HaMikdash. And God told me, I will not build it. Moshe and David were prime examples of people that are driven. Oev kesef, lo yisba kesef, oev mitzvah, lo yisba mitzvah. That's David HaMelech, and that's Moshe Rabbeinu. More Makis only brings down Moshe Rabbeinu. In any case, why utilize this pasuk for it? After all we've said, we've seen from the Rambam, we've seen from the other Medrash, we see precisely why this is the desire that's targeted. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was a driven person. He understood, like the pharaohs of Egypt, that you should spend your whole life like the ant, building and building and building. But he learned the lesson of the ant. Unlike the Egyptian pharaohs that built these huge edifices that lasted thousands of years. I mean, they're considered one of the seven wonders of the world, right? One of the seven wonders of the world are the pyramids of Egypt. You go to Luxor and you see those huge pyramids that the pharaohs did for what? For the afterlife. That's all they did it. And they spent millions of hours and tens of thousands of lives that went into, they were sunk into the afterlife. But they stuffed the pyramids with gold and silver and grains and food like the ant. So they became sophisticated ants. But that drive that's there, that understanding that ha'olam hazeh doimu l'prizdor, that this is a world of earning, it's a world of means, it's merely a world of infinite desire. So it's not illogical that God granted us this desire. It's very logical, it's eminently logical, because if we wouldn't have it, we would never spend our time devoted to it. Because this is a world, we can't envision the Trachlan, we can't envision the palace. We're living in a world, so Hashem put into human beings this insatiable drive for means, not for ends, but what these philosophers refer to as the avas hamoyel. And it's insatiable. And the reason why it's insatiable is because, properly understood, this desire of avas hamoyel is for amassing mitzvahs. So when Shlomo HaMelech says, oev kesef, lo yisba kesef, what he's in effect saying is that there is an avas hamoyel for means which is insatiable. People are driven with an infinite desire to achieve means. And Rashi says, what does that mean? It really means oev kesef, lo yisba kesef. But the drive is drive for means. And it finds its embodiment in the human desire for kesef, which is also means, not ends. Unfortunately, people make a mistake and they go with the avas hakesef. And now it's been corrupted even more, as you pointed out, from the way our life is, because our life is really degenerate. But even in its original state, which was uniquely human, animals don't have it, it became oev kesef lo yisba kesef. But it's the same drive. Moshe Rabbeinu was like Donald Trump. He was like Donald Trump. Driven. Driven. But he was a Donald Trump of spirituality.
Like Robin Moses.
Him, I don't know.
He built all the bridges.
Right. He was driven. But he built empires of spirituality. It's a misuse of the desire to utilize it to build everything else. Although, as we pointed out from the Rambam, if not for that Shigon, where would we be today? If not for Baum or whoever it was, then there wouldn't be a Gibson house, which then becomes a Wasserman house, and if not for that. So therefore we have what to be thankful for, the Amei Haaretz. But the primary understanding of Avas HaMoyel is illogical unless it's understood means for ends that justify the desire, the drive for the means. And that could only be if the ends that justify the means are in themselves infinite. Because for the ends to justify the means, and the means themselves is an insatiable desire, the ends themselves must therefore be infinite. Only in Torah and mitzvahs, only in Olam Haba, does this occur, that the ends themselves are infinite, and that validates and justifies having an insatiable desire. So what we've thus far done is explained two different kinds of Yetzer Hara. One, the typical understanding of the Yetzer Hara are the animal urges and the animal instincts, what we refer to as the Avas HaOrev, and that's one kind of a Yetzer Hara, and that's the kind of a Yetzer Hara that we share with the animals as well. Those are our animal instincts and urges. And here we explained last week that there are two aspects to this Yetzer Hara as well. Why did Hashem give it to us? As we pointed out from Rashi in Kedushin Daf Ches Amud Beis, Kvishas HaYetzer is the greatest reward of all. It's the greatest mitzvah of all. As we pointed out from the Gemara in Yuma Samech Tes Amud Beis, the Yetzer Hara, whether of Avodah Zarah or of Arayis, as Rashi says to explain the Gemara, Loi Klum Yahavtilon Elo Likbule Be'agra, the reason why we have the Yetzer Hara is to receive reward for its suppression. And therefore suppressing and controlling the Yetzer Hara is in itself a worthy reason to have the Yetzer Hara. That's where we get our greatest reward. That's the greatest mitzvah of all, Kvishas HaYetzer. And that's why we say, B'mokam Shabalei Tshuva Oimdin Afilu Tzadikim Gemurim Ein Yechoyin Lamoid. The place of Balei Tshuva is the highest level. And the Gemara in Yuma says that the Averis Avoinoisov, Zdoinoisov Nasik is Chuyos. If a person does Tshuva, the Averis themselves become mitzvahs. If you do Tshuva Me'ava, that's the greatest reward of all. The negation, the suppression of the Yetzer Hara, deserves great reward. Perhaps this can be best symbolized by the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Nun Beis Amud Aleph, this particular purpose of the Yetzer Hara. It says, the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Nun Beis Amud Aleph says, La'osid lovai, in the future, Mevio HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yetzer Hara, V'shoichtoi, B'fnei HaTzadikim, U'B'fnei HaRishoyim. In the future, the ultimate time of Mashiach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take the Yetzer Hara and slaughter it, and the Tzadikim and the Rishoyim will now be able to both objectively view the Yetzer Hara and their struggles with it. Tzadikim nidme lohem kahar gavoya. To the Tzadikim, the Yetzer Hara will seem to them like this insurmountable obstacle, this huge, tremendous mountain that's impossible to climb. Rishoyim, to the Rishoyim, the Yetzer Hara now will appear to them kuchut hasara, like a hair that is so thin. Halalu boichin v'halalu boichin. Both will be crying. Tzadikim boichin, the tzadikim will cry. They will cry in wonderment, in astonishment. V'oimrim, and they will say to themselves, heich yuchoylu lichboish har gavoya kezeh. How were we able to withstand and overcome this huge, tremendous mountain? How are we able to climb it? How are we able to successfully surmount it and overcome it? How could we climb such a mountain? How are we able to control such a powerful Yetzer Hara? The Yetzer Hara will seem to them so stupendously powerful. How were we able to control it? How do we accomplish this suppression of the Yetzer Hara? The Rishoyim, on the other hand, are going to cry and say, what is the Yetzer Hara? It's one little thin hairbreadth. How come we couldn't control ourselves? How did we let ourselves get caught up in the Yetzer Hara? The truth is that both are correct. To the Tzadikim, the constant struggle with the Yetzer Hara is a mountain full of accomplishment. They had to go through and struggle with their Yetzer Hara for an entire life, and it's a lifetime mountain climb, a climb of a huge, stupendous mountain, and it's a lifetime struggle. How were they successfully able to overcome the Yetzer Hara? To the Rishoyim, who constantly gave in to the Yetzer Hara, they gave in to the slightest whim, they gave in to the slightest urge, even if it was thin like a hair, they still succumb to it. And they will wonder and be amazed, how can we succumb to our slightest whim, to our smallest urge, to our smallest desire? How can we succumb to it and gave in to it? The Rishoyim gave in to the Chut HaSaira. The Tzadikim climbed and climbed, one hair possibly at a time, but they overcame this huge mountain. Interesting, some Mefarshim explain that the hair mentioned in the Gemara, Samach Testament Beis, when the Yetzer Hara came out, and it came out in the form of a lion cub. And as the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah captured it and overcame it, a hair fell out. This is the hair that the Rishonim are going to wonder about that they succumb to. The point is, what do we see from this Gemara? We see from this Gemara that in the future, when we view the Yetzer Hara objectively, we will see that the purpose of the Yetzer Hara was its suppression, to overcome it, to control it, to conquer it. Heich yucholnu lichvosh har gavoya kazeh. How are we able to overcome and climb and subjugate and suppress this mountain? The Yetzer Hara is a mountain. The greatest reward, as Rashi Daf Chesam Beis in Kedushin says, is Kvishus HaYetzer. That's one aspect of the Yetzer Hara. Again, we're talking about Yetzer Hara part one. The animal Yetzer Hara, the urges, the animal instincts and the animal urges. And the reason why we have them is, as the Gemara says in Yuma Daf Samach Chesam Beis, Klum Yahiv Teilon Elo Likibule Be'agra, to receive reward for its control and suppression. And we explain that that's one pshat in V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha B'chol Levavcha, with both your hearts, with the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. How do you love Hashem with your Yetzer Hara? By controlling it, by suppressing it, by subduing it, repressing it, and conquering it. Borosi Yetzer Hara, Borosi Torah Tavlin. We explain the word Tavlin is an antidote and a medicine. But then we explain furthermore that the Yetzer Hara is necessary. It's the locomotive that drives people. It's the passion and the fire that, if it's rechanneled and utilized properly, propels them and motivates them to do their mitzvahs with greater zeal, with greater passion, with greater fire. The Yetzer Hara is a necessary component of human life, because if properly utilized, it goes from Tov to Tov Ma'od. So as we've explained, one aspect of the Yetzer Hara is its suppression, because the reward is according to the pain, Haschar Lufi Atzar, control and suppression. The other aspect, though, is that rechanneled and properly utilized, it propels a person to greater heights, because he has greater passion in the doing of good things. The Gemara in Sota, Mem Zayin Amid Aleph, and it's also Gemara in Sanhedrin, Kuf Zayin Amid Beis, perhaps best exemplifies this aspect of the Yetzer Hara, where it says, Yetzer Tinok V'Isha Tehe Smol Doichem V'Yimin Mekareves. The Yetzer, as well as a child and a woman, should be disciplined and controlled and pushed away, repelled with the left hand, but it should be embraced with the right hand. And the right hand is not only symbolizing the stronger suit, but as we always find, that the right side represents the Sama D'Chayim. Sama Chayim L'Maiminim Bo. Proper utilization, it becomes an elixir of life. It's Sama Chayim L'Maiminim Bo. Properly utilized, the Yetzer has positive value. The Gemara in Sota Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph says, Ish V'Isha Zochu Shechina Beinehem. Properly utilized, there's a Shechina dwells amongst them. Loi Zochu, improperly utilized, the passion becomes a passion of fire. Eishach Losom, fire consumes them. Without the Shechina, the passion and the fire of their marriage will destroy them, and they will fall into Gehenna, the passion and the fire of the Yetzer Hara. So again, we see that properly utilized, it becomes an ash of fire that propels a person to Shechina, to Gan Eden. It's utilized properly, it's passion and fire and mitzvah. Improperly utilized, the passion becomes the fires of Gehenna that consume. So the Yetzer Hara can be properly utilized and propel a person to greater heights. This, as we said, is symbolized by the idea of Torah being Tavlin, being the spice. Barasi Yetzer Hara, Barasi Torah Tavlin, and the Torah spices the Yetzer Hara and makes it something palatable, something good, something proper. The Yetzer Hara becomes the Ma'od, that's Tov Ma'od. Tov Ma'od, as the Medrash Rabban Reisha says, is the Yetzer Hara, which becomes Tov Ma'od when properly utilized. The sublimation of the Yetzer Hara, the rechanneling and the utilization of the Yetzer Hara, b'chol levavcha b'shnei yitzrecha, you could properly utilize the Yetzer Hara and serve Hashem literally b'chol levavcha b'shnei yitzrecha. With both your Yetzers, you could serve Hashem. You could serve Him with both your Yetzers, with both the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara, because the Yetzer Hara is the locomotive that motivates the person. It's the engine that propels. It's the fuel. It's the fire. All of this, though, is an explanation of what we call Yetzer Hara Part 1, that first kind of Yetzer Hara. These are the two aspects of that Yetzer Hara, and we discussed this in the context of the Kiyar of the Beis HaMikdash, both its suppression as well as its utilization. But now we're talking about a different kind of a Yetzer Hara, a uniquely human Yetzer Hara. Is the Yetzer Hara that's the insatiable appetite for Avas HaMoyel. It's the desire for means, for the Moyel, which is uniquely human. It's this illogical desire. It's the limitless ambition and the insatiable drive and appetite for means when the ends themselves are not endless. And a person could be saturated and satiated and overindulged. It's the illogic of the Nemola. It's the Shigon of man that the Rambam refers to. She'ein bo'olam Shigon doime l'Shigon ha'odam. This unique taiva, this illogic of Nemola-like behavior, is a special kind of a taiva, which is supposed to be channeled into ambition for ruchnius. The taivas mamon, the oyev kesef lo yisba kesef, that's built in gvul, that's seemingly endless and infinite. Why did Hashem give us this kind of drive and ambition? It's because olam hazeh is an olam asiya, it's a world of means in order to achieve and to attain the olam haba, the world of tachlis, the world of ends, that is truly limitless and truly infinite. Olam hazeh is the earning world, and therefore we're given a drive and an ambition to earn. To earn what? To earn mitzvahs and spirituality. Pleasure in this world is limited. Pleasure in olam haba, is limitless and endless. It's infinite. This is the Yetzer Hara. That's the Oev Kesef Lo Yisba Kesef Yetzer Hara. It's a drive for Oev Mitzvah Lo Yisba Mitzvah. It's Moshe Rabbeinu. It's Dovra Melech.